You're listening to Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast.
All right, guys, I am Nikki T with my co-host, Mr. Kurt Ozon.
Hello, Nikki T. Happy belated birthday.
Thanks, bro.
43.
Yeah, 43 is a good year. And this is not the exact Raised Rowdy podcast like you usually hear me and Kurt doing. We are doing an episode of Behind the Music Biz, which is our business music business podcast. We're super thankful to have you here.
Thank you.
What up, Adam? Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, appreciate you doing this. I was like, talent buying. First of all, I have to make one bad pun.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to do it right now and just get it out of the way, and then we can talk about talent buying. I try to buy talent, but I still have none. Okay, now that that's out of the way, we were hoping that you would explain to us and teach us and learn us on some talent buying. And just explain what you do, and we want to learn because you're smart.
Oh, boy. Where do you want to start?
Okay, well, let's start how I know you. I met you through Luke and Cappy, of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like 2018, 2019?
God, has it been that long?
It's been that long.
Dang.
I was not in my 40s.
Yeah.
There you go.
It'd be like that.
So you were purchasing Luke's talent.
Yeah, put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you can put it that way.
So why don't you explain, like, your role in your current company and kind of, like, what the highest level of what that is.
Yeah, I think use the word talent buyer. I think there's a lot of different subsets of what that is.
Okay.
I moved to Nashville 7.5 years ago because I, previous to this, was booking a club in New Jersey, which I would put that more in the talent buyer world of, I was booking a, let's just say, a Luke Combs show for a reference. I'd book a Luke Combs show. I'd produce one concert. My job at that time was to make sure it was a successful concert, but also to make sure that I made the most money, Luke made the most money. At the end of the day, we walk away and his continues to flourish, however it does.
Did you book the Stone Pony show?
Nope, Starline. I was at Starline Ballroom.
Okay. I think we probably had this conversation on the cruise, but I might have forgotten it.
Funny enough, I booked. You know what it was? I would never forget. You guys played the Stone Pony, and I had Kane Brown at Starline Ballroom the same night, and Aaron Tannenbaum yelled at me for...
That's a freaking good night, though.
It was a great night in New Jersey. So when I moved here 7.5 years ago, it was this idea. So like I said, I booked talent for Starland Ballroom for 10 years. It was this idea, the frustration that bands would come through the venue. But where does my relationship with them extend? Right. My relationship with them was a hope that they didn't get any bigger. If they got bigger, then they would go book arenas and amphitheaters or whatever, stadiums, whatever they're going to do, and I don't get to partake in that anymore into their relationship. So I really had a love for Nashville and the people of Nashville, and I truly, it's like kind of a cliche Nashville story, woke up one day here and just said, I'm not leaving. And it was the people and the idea of like meeting artists, agents, managers, and having this goal to just grow with them. And a business that is scalable in a different way, not working at a club and how many shows are you doing a year, but how do we continue to grow together and do more together? And I think that's what we've achieved over the last 5 years. So to go back to the initial question, talent buying, when you're at a club, whether it's, you know, the Stone Pony or Starland Ballroom, it's working with the agents and managers of the world to identify artists that belong in that market, in that, like, whatever capacity venue is, and working with them to build a budget, to determine what the artist can make, what your ticket prices should be, and at the end of the day, work with your team and sell a concert out, and execute the concert, and then move on to the next one the next day.
And how many concerts a week?
At that time? Starline was probably about 150 shows a year, I would say.
That just gives me like anxiety thinking about all that planning and all keeping track of everything, and it's like, you're not just booking country shows, of course, so it's like,
Understanding everything. I mean, I think I'm one to kind of usually acknowledge what I don't know.
Yeah.
I was not a hip hop guy. I was not an EDM guy. So I would lean on other people to kind of really understand and really kind of educate me on what would work and what not work. I was a rock guy growing up. I was, more than anything, I was like a pop punk emo kid growing up.
So you and Chris Hughes have that.
Me and Chris Hughes, first band I ever booked.
No
Autopilot
way.
Off. Yeah. We still we joke about that. I think every time we speak, we have to go back. The first concert I ever booked in my life, I was about 16 years old. I booked an Autopilot off show.
Which is Luke's business manager. It's an old band.
That's wild.
Go full 360 on how careers can come together and cross paths. We tend to talk a lot about how insane it is that we're still doing this together. So
that's wild.
And you were 16.
I was 16, 17 years old when I started. Yeah.
Nuts.
Wow.
How did you know at 16 or 17 that this was what your passion was?
The short story is I babysat someone's kids who owned a concert venue, and I would tell him all the time about these bands I liked. And I grew up, I think the kind of pop punk emo scene was a time and a place, and being on Long Island and the world of Taking Back Sundays and Brand News and From Autumn to Ashes, like they were just exploding at when I was a teenager. And so I would just tell this guy all the time, like, you should book this band. And then he'd book them, you know, and they'd sell out. And then one day I was in community college and he was like, man, you should book the venue. Like you're, everything that you know. And I think it's, again, a little bit was like generational. Like I just knew what was popular then because that's what I listened to.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like data driven like it is now. This is you just being like,
I was a kid on Long Island. This band is sick. Let's book them. And by the way, many of misses too of like bands that I thought were huge. And I'd be like, I'm going to book this band. And like 10 people show up. I'm like, well, I love them. I paid for a show for myself.
Yeah.
I did. The funny I say that. I did. One of the things that I constantly talked about, and I still do, I got into it because I realized that I can book bands that I liked and pay them money and get to go to a concert. Like, how freaking cool is that? Like, you know?
Yeah.
That's the best. It's like meta, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sure you probably had a couple moments where it was like this band that you liked when you started working with them, dealing them money wise, it was like, maybe I don't like them as much. Maybe I just like their music.
Yes. And by the way, and then you end up not liking their music. To be honest, it is, that is, and I'm sure you guys have the same working in the industry. Like there is moments where you work with people and you're just like, man, like that was a bad experience. And like every time their song comes on now, I can't listen to it.
Yeah.
There's so many talented people in Nashville and there's so many talented people in Nashville that are, you know, great people that it's like, I just don't want to waste time with people that aren't that.
Yeah.
I think that's what, to that point, I think that's really what got me to flip from being kind of a club concert promoter to working and touring was the idea that I truly hated that I booked 150 different shows a year.
Yeah.
So you'd come through the doors on a Monday and then you were coming through the doors on a Tuesday. I had a completely different experience, right, with each of you. And there's some days that you were like, someone came through the doors and they just, it could be their production manager, their tour manager, or the bass player, or whatever, were just having a bad day and just weren't nice. And you'd be like, man, I can't wait till this show gets over, you know? And I hated that feeling. And when I came to Nashville, it was this idea of like, well, I can pick and choose who I work with, right? I can pick and choose who I want to be around. And then again, my business, if using the Lucas example, like we get to be partners and we get to grow our business together versus, and you get to see the same face, this mug, every time you walk in the door. So.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you ended up, you know, cutting your teeth, you know, booking this club. Mm-hmm. How did you end up moving to Nashville? You said you woke up here and decided not to leave.
But. That is kind of the truth. I kind of like most of us, you fall into a love for this community. I was booking the club in, like I said, in Jersey. I was doing a Chris Young show, and at the time, his agent and manager were there, and somehow we just got in a conversation. They said, hey, this is your new tour promoter. I was like, nope, that's not what I do. I book a club. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, but why not? Like, we like you better than we like most other promoters. Like, why can't you be that guy? And I was like, I mean, I guess I can, but I don't know. What do I know about Corbin, Kentucky? Or I can't tell you what. And he's like, well, you'll figure it out, you know? And and I did. And we did the Chris Young I'm Coming Over tour. I think Kane Brown, Dan and Shay, Morgan Evans were all support in that time. And it was a great experience for me. And like I said, it was an amazing experience being part of a team and making decisions that were best for the artist, not best to make money on one show. And it was so eye-opening for me. At the time I got divorced. I got separated from my ex-wife on a Thursday. I came down for CMA Fest. And on Monday I called my boss at my company and said, hey, I'm moving to Nashville. And I just said, I said, and it was about the people. I'd figure out the job part. Like, and I was like, hey, if AG wants to move me here, let's figure it out. If not, I'll just start over. But it truly, when you're going through, some life stuff and you find your community of people, that just changes everything. And it truly, I say it as a joke, but it was truly wake up on a Monday morning and I was like, yeah, I'm moving here. So.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. What year was that? You said seven years ago?
17. Okay. So it was like end of 16, start of 17.
Crazy.
Just your whole life just changed.
Yeah. And quite honestly, and then the people, it really is this community. I mean, it's the people that you meet down here that every day you get to learn together. And I think also Nashville was going through this generational shift at that time, where you had a younger part of, you know, let's call it over the last 10 years, a younger part of the community, people who are a little bit more empowering, empathetic, kind of coming up in Nashville that maybe weren't from here, like myself. And you just were able to kind of build this community of people that genuinely supported each other. That's the reality. And the reality is, like, one of my first meals here was Cappy, and it was, I think it was like 18. And just hearing his story and Luke's story, it was just like, these are the people I want to work with. That's inspiring, you know?
Damn, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm feeling inspired, man.
Yeah.
So when you were working at the club in New Jersey, was your boss, you said you called your boss, was that the club owner, or was that, you said AEG? Or?
Well, that club actually where I started was on Long Island. It was a club owner.
Yeah.
Like I said, great at the time, great family friend. Mm-hmm. I knew his kids. I believe he babysat his kids. I left there. I just realized that wasn't being in a, you know, being in a small club and just the business that I was in, it wasn't really what I wanted to do. I actually went to Warner Music Group for 2 years and did tour marketing. And then one day in 07, got a cold call from AEG, which I did not know what that was. And they said, hey, we're buying a club in New Jersey. We heard that you know how to book secondary markets and you're a rock guy and that's what this venue thrives on. So would you want to come over here? And kind of made the shift and started there in 07.
So for folks that don't know what AEG is, can you give a little backstory on that?
Sure. AEG is the largest private entertainment company in the world. In addition to owning arenas and stadiums, produce Coachella, Stagecoach, C2C, CMC Rocks, and then a bunch of other multi-genre festivals. Also is a network of promoters and clubs and venues throughout the world that we promote.
Damn. So that's like real estate, their own and all that, all those spots too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And I see the Pinnacle hat. I assume
Pinnacle
that's
hat. Pinnacle's our newest, opened 2 weeks ago with Casey. And
oh yeah.
Have you been yet or no?
No.
The best way, someone said it yesterday. I was over there with a production manager and he said, it's a European arena. And I haven't been over there to an arena show anywhere in Europe, and as I've said it to a couple of people in the last kind of day, they're like, you're right. That's what it is. It's an arena that's built for live music. It was, you know, it's not a lot of other venues that, especially clubs and theaters that you play, they were built, or even arenas, they were built for something else.
Sports,
or even if you look in the venues around town here, they were a house, they were a warehouse, they were a basement, they were a bar, and they then kind of changed. And it's like, this place was built to be a music venue. Whenever you get a chance to go, I highly suggest it.
Well, I'm sure nowadays also with acoustics and technology and stuff, it probably sounds amazing.
It sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Let me go for
good. I saw Casey was playing there, but it was like when we just got back or something.
Yeah.
It was like the week after you got back from Australia.
Yeah.
It looks like a super cool building from the outside too. It's very eye catching. It's almost like the Sphere kind of vibe. You know what I mean?
I saw something that said it's the Sphere of Nashville. It's also, and the whole complex down there that eventually will be built up within the next year. It'll be a new urban landscape of restaurants, parks, residential, all that kind of over there. I'm really excited. We'll move our offices there sometime over the summer.
That's great.
And so that's AEG's like newest spot in town.
I'd call that our flagship for the company at the moment. You know, it is definitely.
Yeah, that's their planting their flag in Nashville.
In Nashville, yeah.
I love that.
Well, now we know, you know, what AEG does, which is, I mean, so much, but it's like, and then now we know how you got there. How did you get roped in with Luke?
Like I said, I love people. Like I'm all about, you know, about the people. I want to be around people that inspire me. And like I said, I'll never forget, we were at Taco Mamacita in Edge Hill and had a lunch with Cappy. And RIP. Have you gone to the new one or no?
We went maybe
a couple days ago.
Yeah. In Germantown.
Same or no? Not to give him a shout out, but
yeah. No, it's great. I think it's probably better, honestly, but
I had the Peruvian chicken. It was freaking delicious.
I always loved the tortilla soup. That was my go-to.
Oh yeah.
But we went and I did hear Cappy and Luke's story, which I'm sure you know well. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by them. It was also inspired by Tannenbaum, his agent, mm-hmm. of understanding what a partnership could look like, right? And understanding that I'm not booking Starland Ballroom anymore, where I'm just trying to make all the money I can in one night, and then tomorrow you're going to go on to a new market, a new venue. It was, how do we dream? We're here today, and I think that was the first arena tour. How do we dream bigger, and how do we go to stadiums? And it was this idea of like, hey, let's go down a 5-year hole of like, let's make all the right decisions every step of the way to get there. And it really was, it was that inspiration of someone who kind of looked at it that way, and opened the door for us to do that. And it really, I mean, to me, that was my first real take into being in the touring world.
Oh, really? So Luke was your first?
Chris Young was. Chris Young was the one that got me here. But Luke was, in terms of like looking at it, I mean, I did one tour with Chris. Luke was like the real, like, let's look at what a 5-year, what the next 5 years could, let's dream
and
up.
So that was 2018. Mm-hmm. So you guys sat down and said, let's talk through to 2023.
Yeah. Understanding how they, what their vision was, and how we could play a part in that.
And then, so we started with a regular, I hate to say regular, but we started with an arena tour. Mm-hmm. Then we did, the next year, was the next year the 360 tour?
No, next year was an arena tour, but it got cut short due to the pandemic. And then we started over again after.
Okay. So, I forgot about pandemic.
5 years ago yesterday.
Wow. Oh, weird.
Yeah.
That's wild. Well, that's a whole nother podcast, of course. But then, so then we did an arena tour. So you were saying, okay, let's do this arena tour. Then, but in five years, we want to be doing stadiums. Mm-hmm. And
how are you making decisions every step of the way to get there, right? How are you not playing a market too often? How are you, you know, how are you, and look, and again, I'll hands down to Luke and Cappy and Aaron and what they've kind of dreamed up. How are you laying the seeds and the foundation in every market you go to so that it is only bigger next time you go there? Our global touring team, like, we bought in. Like, it's just that vision and that to be able to look at something like that, you can't help but being inspired from it.
Yeah, because it's like in 2018, we're playing an arena show, which is incredible. Like, for 99.9% of artists, that's the ceiling. That's mm-hmm. That's the dream. And you're playing in front of 14,000 people, maybe, or maybe 17 at Bridgestone or something. And then how many tickets did we do in Sydney? You know, it's like
40,000, 50,000. Oh, no, Sydney was like 60,000.
Yeah, I think it was like 130,000 tickets over two nights.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's 4 or 5 years, you know, or 5 or 6 years, but that's crazy.
But I think it's working with people who have that foresight. You know, we work in an industry. Like, there's also nothing wrong with being a club band forever, right?
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
That's a business. You're getting your art out there, your music out there. But I think that there's a different mindset in Nashville of looking at the 20 and 30 year career, and that's what I like being a part of, is to be able to kind of sit down and like dream up what does that look like year over year, and how are we growing together? How are we? And to the point, like I said, is how are you laying the seeds in 2025 for what 2030 could look like? And continue to give that experience to fans, to the artists and all that, and then you continue to grow.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's got to be really difficult and even like nerve-wracking, like booking a band or planning a tour, because it's like you don't know how many tickets they're going to sell.
No.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, I've played with Luke the last 1,000 years, so it's like he just always sells tickets.
Yeah, but that's not normal.
Right. He's obviously, you know, not the usual thing. Yeah. And there's also a lot of work that goes into that I just don't know about, you know. And so when Aaron came on and we did a podcast with Aaron, he was explaining booking. And I was just like, and he was just full of so much incredible information.
And I think, like, Aaron is he's my counterpart on this, right? Like, in when it comes to Luke and our relationship is for him and Cappy and Luke to dream up the plan and then sit with me. And then for me to sit there, I tell people I'm a glorified accountant, right? I sit there and dream up a budget of, okay, well, you want the guardrail, you want to charge, you know, $50 a ticket, and this, it's this many people, this is what it's going to cost. Here at the end of the day is what the business model looks like, right? Again, Luke is a little bit different. It's an anomaly of like, well, hey, we can go in a place and it's going to work. Mm-hmm. With other artists, I think you said before about data, it is trying to create the right roadmap. And there's trust me, you've got markets that you're just like, oh man, that did not make sense. And sometimes you're just trying to get from point A to B, right? You're on a bus tour and you're trying to get from Denver to LA and you're like, well, we're going to stop.
Amarillo, Texas.
We're going to go to, yeah, we're going to go to Albuquerque. We're going to go to, you know, and it might not be the right decision. So we do spend a lot of time understanding data, looking at history, looking at contemporaries. You know, there's a lot of artists that we work with that they're contemporaries and where did they go have success? And you're going to make mistakes. It's just not every artist is. There's no artist. There's no two artists that are equal.
So, yeah. Do you guys have like systems that kind of pop out reports in terms of stuff like that, or is it more like intrinsic knowledge over time?
Both. There are some websites and systems that you can look at kind of history, and it will actually give you like, this is the most comparison to this artist would be these other four artists, and here's their streaming numbers, and here's where they're 2 years ahead in their career, and here's the venues that they played, and here's what their ticket prices were. Most of it is gut. Someone asked me this the other day, and I was like, I would say 99% of our business is gut.
99%?
Yeah, is gut. You just kind of know where the fan is. You know, you can put a comparison. Like I said, there's no two artists that are the same. So you can put so many, and I say gut based off the resources that you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's nothing that is going to say this is definitely going to work in this market. It's a no brainer.
Of course.
You know, you just kind of have to say if like it, all the signs point to yes. So like, let's give yes a chance and we can be wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like you got to pay attention to the data, but lead with your heart.
Yeah, and lead and trust the team, right? The team knows. Like, by the way, I said this to a developing artist recently. You actually know better than anyone where you're popular. You go out on the road, you know that it was the crowd loud. Were they not loud? Did they buy merch? Did they not buy merch? Were they, you know, especially if you're an opening act, it's like your instinct is likely better than any data that we'll have. Just because people listen to you know, how did they react to you? Did you play a great show? Did you leave them wanting more? Like, there's you as the artist know it better than anybody. So we do trust in that.
That's like when I'm on stage, there's a lot going through my head, but it's like trying to remember if the show, like thinking about merch and all that would stress me out. I feel like.
And we've got I will say this on our team, we've got a great team. I mean, I'll get asked a lot of like, as you know, I go to pretty much every show, and they're like, yeah. Well, what do you do? Like my wife will ask, what do you do at the show? And I'm like, nothing. If I'm at the show, my job's done, right?
Yeah.
My job is to figure out what the plan looks like with the team. But then we have a great team of, I mean, you know, a lot of them on the road, Shank and Granger.
Of course. And
you know, it's like we have a great team. They go execute. We have a marketing team. We have a ticketing team. They go execute on everything that we've kind of all decided on, which allows a lot of it to be taken out of my head. Not that it does, but, you know. It allows me, you have to have trust in kind of the, just like you have a trust in the rest of your team on stage or behind the scenes, like you kind of have to have trust in the rest of the team that they're doing their job. So we've got a great team.
So I know obviously you work with Luke, but like you also work with Zach. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at some of the artists that you're working with. It's just like crazy.
Yeah, pretty lucky.
yeah. But, and are you like, do you scout new artists or?
No. I keep saying back to it. It's the people. No, it's the people. I don't ever look really for money. You know, obviously like you fall in love with an artist or you fall in love with the people on the team. And then you're like, oh, I really want to work on this. Like I love the team. I can, as I like to tell people, I'm going to talk to you more than I talk to my wife. So like this has to work, you know, like this has to work. No, everything I would say is by circumstance, but it really just starts with the people. And really, I mean, loving the music, it's tough to work on something that you don't love. That's the truth. Like just, I imagine you're in the same boat and especially the people, like if you can't see yourself having dinner with them and enjoying a conversation, like it's really tough to work with them. And, so I think it really does stem. And most of the stuff that I work on, like any younger stuff, it's usually from the team. It's Cappy coming and being like, hey, we signed this artist. Like, listen to it. Like it. You know, if you like it, let us know. Like, let's work together. Let's build a plan. Like, it all stems from that. I would think everything that we work on has pretty much stemmed from a relationship that was already existing within our walls.
Interesting. So, I've got like a million questions. But one, I brought up Zach for a second just because he's such a ticket monster. Are you involved with that John Mayer show?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What? Is John Mayer opening for Zach?
Uh-huh. But did you go back, if you go back, when Zach played Crypto.com Arena last spring, John came out. Mm-hmm. And did you ever see his podcast after?
No. I didn't even know John's podcast.
He has a podcast. He came out somewhere with a video. And what he talked about was what he was so, his mind was blown watching the band on stage and how they communicated through music. And he was like, He's like, it's been a long time. He's obviously never seen a Lacombe show, but it's been a long time since I've watched a band and how they, with their instruments, communicate with each other. And he went down this like hole of how just like inspired he was. So it was honestly on the Zach side, it was probably a natural ask of like, hey, this is pretty cool. Let's, you know, and it works. Like, I was talking to my wife about it and she's like, well, I mean, I used to listen to John. I love John Mayer. I go to John Mayer shows, but like, I also love Zach. Like, this kind of, it works. It's such a great 1-2 show.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's like the coolest shit ever. Like,
did you see the Notre Dame show that we announced?
Yes.
With Shane Gillis. Yeah. Also, yeah.
He's hilarious. That couple beard. That's a whole nother podcast also. But so I meant like, how? I don't even, it's just like, so he's doing, is it one show with John?
One show with John. And
are they doing 360? On that,
or we are 360 on that
360 stadium show with John Mayer opening. That's the coolest shit ever. That's awesome. And what was your role in that? Because I saw this lineup, I'm like, holy fuck.
Role is is managing a lot of different conversations. One, they've never done a concert in Ann Arbor, so that was a good 6-month lead. Whether anything, who that artist could be, what that could be like, that's all just kind of chance. So it was one kind of, when we have everything like our, you know, again, like, you know, Jeff Shunk on our team, but our some other folks on our production team going out there and seeing how does the production fit in? Can you get a crane in? Can you get a stage in? How do you build a show here? Zach had brought up wanting to play the market. And it was kind of this natural fit. And most times, like, we don't, like, I wish that I could take any credit for like how a lineup is formed. Like, that comes from that comes from the artist's mind.
Yeah, that's Zach.
Artist sure. Zach says, "Hey, I want to ask this person." Tez says to his team, "Hey, go contact their agent, see if they're available." You know, and that I would say it is a little bit of pulling all the pieces together, and you get a lot of bits of information. You hear from the manager, you hear from the agent, you hear from the team. They're working on this, and then it's like my job is to kind of be the quarterback, right? And my job is then to take all that information and make sure that all of the tentacles of our team, the marketing people, the ticketing people, the production people, the venue, all have the information that they need to be able to go do their jobs. That's really actually, when you ask about like where I sit today as a promoter, that's my job. Like, is to be the quarterback and make sure that I'm communicating the vision, the idea, the plan, and sharing that with the team so that they can go execute at their, and then just making sure that we're following up on what we said we would do.
It's just like, with that show specifically, it just feels, and it just is like unprecedented, right? You said they've never done a show there.
Never done it, and based on sales, it'll be the largest show ever in America.
Right, that's what I was saying. I'm like, I've heard that people are saying that this will be the biggest single show in the United States ever.
Ever.
Wild.
It's crazy. Imagine being the person in the last row.
Yeah, or imagine being like the promoter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
We actually, on our team, we have, I call it three quarterbacks, two other colleagues that I work with on the back front. And I'm usually the, in your pace of the like, but the what if? Like, oh my, like, you know what I mean? Like, can you imagine what the traffic's going to be like that day? Like,
yeah.
I'm the one that's usually the like pointing, like poking holes in our team, you know? I'm always thinking the kind of the what if, but look, we have a great team, and as long as they continue to execute in every way, like, I feel pretty confident.
I mean, how many tickets is that going to be?
It's 112,000, I believe, is where we're at.
So I remember when we started playing stadium shows. Our first one was in Dallas.
Yes.
We sold more tickets in that one show than we did the entire club tour.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like, you know, 48,000 tickets a club show, and then over 50 for the one stadium show.
It's crazy.
And then, excuse me. And then Zach, instead of playing two nights at a stadium and selling, you know, 50, he's just going to do one 360 show and sell 112 or whatever.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Yeah, and you said imagine being in the top row. I'm sure it'll be amazing.
It's amazing. You bring up the Cowboys Stadium when we went that first stadium show. And that was a moment. That was actually the first. No, it wasn't the first. First stadium show we ever did was Denver. I just realized that. Mile High.
Oh, remember yes. Yes, okay.
We did the three, yeah. In the snow?
Yes, I do remember that.
I just started to correct you on that. I just realized that. But I will remember being at that show, and I couldn't help but it's like a thing that I obsess over is thinking about the person in the last row and watching. I remember watching them during that show and just being like, man, they're having the time of their life, and they don't care that they're in the last row. They're here. And like every show I go to, I will always look at that person in the last row. And I don't know why. It's something that I obsess over.
You know what we do? Because we're playing back-to-back stadium shows in the same city. Mm-hmm. I know I'm telling you this, you know this, but for the people listening, it's like we'll play two nights in wherever, Arizona or something. And what we've done is usually after the first night, we're sleeping on the bus under the stadium or in the stadium. So it's like the stadium is empty. It's 2 a.m. Everyone's gone home, but we're still there. So we'll get in a golf cart, you know, and maybe you shouldn't be driving a golf cart this time of night. And then we'll take it all the way up to the highest seat and just hang out there. And like, I'll usually have a cigar. And we just sit and we're like, what's it like being up here? And kind of wonder what it's like. Just making sure, like, giving ourselves a little bit of perspective and, I guess, gratitude for getting to do what we do. But also, it's just like, boys, we just played a fucking stadium show.
One of the things that's really cool... I wonder if you ever look at it this way. I try, especially when we have the two nights, I'll look at one specific seat, right? Like, I'm like, okay, I'll be standing on whatever stage left. And I'm like, okay, look at that person out in section 101. And you'll see them on one night there and like, oh, they're crying. They're having the night of their life. They're so happy. It's emotional. And then I'll watch that same seat the next night and watch a different fan in that seat. And they're laughing. They're drunk. They're singing along. And I'm like, how cool is that? Like, my thing, the reason you kind of asked this before, but the reason I got into live, I loved watching the emotion that people experience watching music. Like, that's my favorite thing to do. Actually, you
Nick's favorite
when thing. You talk about like going up to the last row, one of my favorite things to do when we've done our stadiums is to sit in a seat behind the stage and look out into the crowd. And it's just like, there's 50,000 people that are having an emotional response to what you guys are doing on stage. And like, that's the coolest thing. Yeah. So yeah, I like watching that like one seat and I'm like, man, look, last night someone was crying, tonight they're laughing. Like, it's a different person, completely different emotional response. Like, that's so cool. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you get that same thing or if you're just up there rocking the fiddle and you know.
rocking. I'll take that. I mean, getting to play Luke's music is a crazy rush. It's like, I say, it's like better than any drug being up there. But especially you see so much shit when you're on stage. Sometimes I have to focus and think, okay, there's a fight over here or whatever.
Yeah.
And, or like a fan with a funny sign. And then I'm like interacting with this fan. And then I look up, I'm like, I got to make sure that like I'm being entertaining for the people that are up there too. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's fun to like, if I go to a show and I see like someone messing with someone in the front row, I think it's cool. Giving a kid a pick or whatever, you know? So, but
I'm the fan side, right? So like until I was 35, Razor Ruddy didn't exist. I was a dude that went to concerts, right? And I sat in the back row of shows. Some of my favorite shows I've been to, I was almost the back row. I saw Limp Bizkit with Kid Rock and Stained in 1999, the second to last row of the Penguins Arena at the time. And my brother Steve and I had the best time in the world, you know?
Yep.
And that's one of the things I still remember to this day. You know, he bought me a red backwards Yankees hat and bought me that ticket and took me while I was still in high school to that show.
But that's the point is like music, these, like what we do creates such a memory. I had Bergman last night texted me. He wanted to go to Journey at the Pinnacle.
Yeah.
He was in town and he tells me a story. He said, well, Journey was my first concert. It was my bar mitzvah gift from my brother. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I will always, if I'm in a town, I want to go see Journey. Like that's, I'm the same way. Like I'm still a fan, like 100% a fan. Like it's, I love it.
I love it too.
All right. Well, how often are you at shows that just for fun?
I'd say probably a dozen shows a year, you know, that are not, I mean, that's a lot of
shows to go to in general.
Well,
a dozen
on top of all the ones you're at for your thing.
For work. But work, but by the way, I was saying before we started that, you know, my wife, who I love dearly, she's like, you do realize a lot of your travel is self-inflicted. And I was like, oh, 100% is self-inflicted. Like, but how can I not want to be there? Like, one, the fruit of your labor, right? You've done this work. But other, like, I'm genuinely a fan. Like, it's amazing to be there and, you know, experience it. So
And you get to go hear Luke sing all the time, or John Mayer shred with Zach. That's going to be so sick. Who else is on that bill, by the way?
You're putting me on the spot here. Josh Sloan.
Oh, cool.
And Ryan Bingham.
So sick.
It's a good show.
Yeah, yeah, very good show. And so, but like, that's just, it's just, my mind's blown on that. But there is so much to learn also by going and checking out other shows just as a fan, because it's like, you, when you're always backstage and you're eating catering and you're having free beers and stuff, you don't realize like what regular like civilians are going through to enjoy a show. So I think it's important to like just go to concerts if you work in this industry, just to see what regular folks are doing.
You know, you actually said it, but I think about that a lot, is the process of getting to a concert isn't fun.
Oh, it's
but from buying the ticket to parking to you know, like
beers.
it's not easy. So if you can't give them, a fan, the most amazing night of your life, of their life, like it's so important to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Like it's just there. And that's why we're here, because of them.
100%.
Like it's,
I think so it's easy to forget that when you're just kind of caught up in numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And not to put yourself in their shoes. Or boots.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's me. Me and my friends were chasing down pit tickets for shows by joining fan clubs, and six of us would be in a group text saying who got what, you know, to try to get all of us in there. And then other shows were like, nah, we're just going to go hang in the lawn and get a bus to take to this show and get hammered, and everybody's just going to do that. You know, we're curating our own experience based on the music and, like, the vibe of the music also. But the bonds that I created through being friends with people and going to shows with them is no other, same, in my opinion.
And I think music as a whole, but live especially, it just, I had my first beer at a Tom Petty show. I had, like, you
That's
know what
great.
I mean? Like, it's like, you just look back and you're just like, there's so many things that you can think back to where you're just like, this experience. And even like friends I talked to today, like something will come on, like I'll put music on and like, it'll be a band I listened to 20 years ago. And I'll like text those friends that I remember that I haven't spoken to in 10 years and being like, man, you remember this? Like it keeps you together with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just like, nostalgia is such a powerful drug in that way too.
Yeah.
I know I talked a lot about big shows and Luke Stadium tours and all this and that, but do you get like the same sort of joy and fulfillment working on promoting club shows or
I mean, all of it, it's all relative to the amount of fans that are there, but yeah, there's no, again, the watching somebody have an experience, if there's 10 people in the room or 100,000 people in the room, is the same. I think like that up close and personal, being in a club, and it's so different than being in a stadium.
Yeah.
So it's different, but like, I mean, right now I've got quite a few things on the road, and all of them have a different experience and feeling. You also have a different relationship with the artist and artist team, which I think changes a lot of it too, of just like, what's your relationship and what are the goals are different for every artist? What are we trying to build together? So where are they in that building process? Like that kind of gets a little different, but I would say the experience overall, it doesn't.
I feel like there must be something really exciting about an artist on the come up.
Yeah.
Like working on that.
I mean, the wins are different, right? You know what I mean? The wins, the little successes are different, and the celebrations are different, and they mean something different. I don't know that you lose it as you grow. I don't think you do. I mean, you can tell again, it's you sit in the last row still and sit in awe, like, but I think it's the same thing when you sell out your first, you know, club show, or you grew in a market, from you grew to the next level, or you played your first arena, or you played your first, like, it's, there's something about being in those moments and sharing those moments together. That's what I get high off of. Like, that's, you know.
That's super inspiring.
It is.
Oh, before I forget, congrats on your CMA award.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate the acknowledgement. I don't like the attention.
Okay. Well, there you go.
But
well,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
And honestly, it's been you and the team are a big part of all that. So thank you guys.
I voted for you, so.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
I voted for you too.
Thanks, bro. We'll get him next year.
I was like, Kurt, you're gonna win eventually, you know.
It's actually better to be nominated, because you can't win 2 years in a row. So if you get nominated and don't win, you just be nominated every year.
Yeah,
that was
and
my.
You get free drinks every year.
Exactly.
Or you get to wear a suit and all that.
Yeah. What we do, so I don't know if you know, like, we host a lot of events in town.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to see writers' rounds. We get to see these kids like start.
Yep.
We get to watch them be okay at writing songs to, man, they're shutting the room down. You know, yep. Sometimes you get to hear voices develop. Like what Ella Langley sounded like at 19 and what she sounds like now is not the same.
Yep.
And you can say that for almost every artist that comes to town and really is like building it here. And now we're starting to do full band stuff. So that's the next level for us. It was like, okay, we had the writers rounds and that's great. But now we get to see what these kids are like when they're got their band. Mm-hmm. Are they tight? Do they have a lot of work to do?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, that's the next level of it, you know? And oftentimes it's before they're hitting clubs.
And it's like, let me ask you guys this. Does it, the concept of writers rounds, I feel like when I moved here, like they existed all, like, is it still an art that exists?
Oh yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we host writers rounds. I host every Sunday. Matt hosts every other Tuesday. Yeah. There's a lot of other really good ones in town. Not any that are, Whiskey Jam, which is, you know, full band. Of course. But like when Whiskey Jam was a thing, Revival was almost like equal as a writer's round, right? And Rob's did such a great job of curating that.
Yeah.
Terry Joe Box with Music Row Freak Show, like a stalwart in the industry, heavy in that Ashley McBride family, leans on, I would say, like more emotional, kind of more traditional as the regular thing. Like she goes everywhere, but that's like her bread and butter. And then there's a couple ones in town that we love. Our buddy Josh Terry, who is a crazy person that we love.
He's Josh Terry is a crazy person.
Yeah. Do you know Josh?
I do.
We love Josh. Yeah. So like, I think he's crushing it too. And he has this girl, Courtney, who is an artist that he has like kind of like helped grow. And she's doing one called Court Order, which I'm super excited about. Those are both at Live Oak, which is where we were before we moved all of ours over to the Colbeer family at Losers and Riley Greenstock. Nice. Bond. Yeah.
I ask. I mean, truthfully, it's like that's the other thing. It's like I tell everyone, like, Billy Joel is my number one. Like I'm rooted, like, the music I listen to is all in storytelling. So it's like, for me, like, I love going to writers' rounds and just kind of hear like I can listen all day to the story behind the song and why, how, you know, how it came to life and how it came to be. So
And we get to watch. Oftentimes, what we'll do is we'll book someone and they'll let them bring their two or three friends with them. Mm-hmm. Because then they tell those stories.
Yeah.
They say, oh, man, the day we wrote this, blah, 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 you know. My favorite storyteller writers around in town is Jordan Walker. You know Jordan from Walker McGuire?
Mm-hmm.
When he plays the listening room, if any of my friends are in town, like when that's happening, I was like, you got to go to this. Because it's as much a comedy show as it is amazing songs. It's both, you know. And that's why the writers rounds, watching someone shut the room up with a song, a busy barroom, is amazing for me.
I agree.
Now, also, watching someone that understands that they might not shut the room down with a song, depending how busy it is, and how can they affect that, right? It shows stage presence. Mm-hmm. It's easier to take a room when you have a full band with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to shut it down with a song. I remember a moment a few years ago at CMA Fest. Kendall Inskeep played one of our rounds, and she's incredibly talented. And just watching her shut down a CMA Fest tourist level crowd to be completely quiet where you could hear a pin drop in a loud bar was wild. Mm-hmm. Right. And so moments like that are super cool.
I had that a couple years ago at CMA Fest with Wyatt Flores. I remember I saw him at Whiskey Jam, and it was, you know, still relatively young. And it was like that moment of like everyone kind of turned around and was like, oh, wow.
That's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, my business partner, Matt, the other owner of Raise Rowdy, was out on the road with Trey Lewis, and Wyatt opened for them in Oklahoma. And he was like, this kid, like, he saw it then.
Yeah.
He's like, this kid's like the next kid from here, you know?
Yeah. Wyatt's a monster, man.
He is.
Especially with the full band. His band slams too. Yeah. They're great. They were, they did that show with us, with Parker at the Gorge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or shows. I think we did two shows there.
Two shows.
But that's the thing that I think you talk about Nashville and the community. There's the two sides of that. There's the artists and them getting to find their people. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that are their co-writers, the people that are there when they feel like they want to move home. You know, like they find their community. Yep. And then there's the other side of it too.
We have the same thing.
Yeah.
We have the same. I mean, it really is finding your people that you... There's a trust. I mean, we're a business, right? At the end of the day, the industry as a whole is a business. But like, it's to kind of sometimes disarm and to find your people that you can be vulnerable and honest with and talk to in the good and the bad and work through, I try to follow, like, when we have an issue at a show with a show, whatever, I'm like, hey guys, we can be solution based. Like, we can all put blame point fingers, like, but it's finding those people that, like, they want to be part of that solution together and not just, you know, I think we all grow up in a world, again, it's a business, that it's quick to be like, this is your fault. It's your fault. You know? And it's like, but I think we're a community here where, like, you do find your people that you're like, oh, we work well together. We're, you know, and they become some of your best friends.
Yeah.
So. It's wild to hear you talking about, like, problems and stuff like that when that stuff happens, but it's like I'm so far removed from experiencing anything like that.
That's the hope.
Yeah.
I'm
speaking to just to how great you guys do, but like, what's an example of, like, it made up or otherwise? I don't want to have you say things.
It could be as little as a wrong password on a presale, right? Fans are now and then they're getting the artist social media is getting hit up, and it's like, and either we published it wrong, the ticketing company published it wrong, the artist could have published it wrong. It can start as small as that. Let's see if I can go back in time in the vault to. I got a good one.
Please.
I did a show once and it just wasn't doing great. So I said, hey, let's do, you know, we're gonna do buy one get one, whatever. Or it was me plus three. So it was like, hey, with every three tickets you get one free. The venue accidentally set it up that if you bought one ticket, you get three free. Show sold out in a second.
Oh, God.
And I was like, well, wait a second. I have to pay the artist. Like, my responsibility is to the artist, and my business model doesn't work anymore now because you just gave away. And you just work through it with, I mean, look, we're all human, you know?
Yeah.
But, wow. Like, there's lots of things like that. There's lots of, you know, can be production issues. It could be, hey, we thought the stage was going to fit in this tunnel and we got there and it doesn't. And how are we going to get it in the building? And what are we going to do? Or you had damage to a field, you know, we deal with that a lot of, you know, just you're coming into someone's home of a football stadium and do damage. Like, there's so many. Yeah. Band is smoking cigars in the upstairs bowl. There's no smoking.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 100 different things, and like I do think that's what why I love our team and what I think makes us great is we do look at everything solution based. And
yeah.
I think and to know that you don't see the problems means a lot because they exist every day.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I mean, we have our own problems on stage that, you know, we fuck up sometimes. You know, it's like I said, there's a fight in the crowd, and, you know, or you're waving to someone and you just clam a note. It just happens sometimes.
We're all human.
Yeah. And it's just, at the end of the day, we're all having fun up there.
I was just going to say, by the way, what we do for, I try to always, I'm like, what we do for a living, like, we're blessed, you know, like, this is in every aspect, whether you're in the business, the band, you know, like, this is, it's the coolest job in the world. I would have never dreamt it up. You know, so it's,
that's how I feel 100%.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, my boss at my logistics job, which is kind of what I did before we started doing this, really. Was like, Nick, if you had the passion that you have for music, for logistics, you'd have my job.
Yeah.
And that made me realize I was never
in the right place.
Yeah. I was never gonna.
And even before that, like, one of my earliest things, my high school had a radio station. And
that's cool.
It was a class, and it broadcasted like a mile outside of the school, but like your parents would listen to it and they'd be like, oh, there's my son. Like, he's playing. It was like 90s alternative rock that we were playing. And I got really into it. Like, I loved, like, the teacher was great. And I would just always hang out. I'd cut class and just hang out in the radio station and learn about, like, what goes into, like, it was a little bit of behind the curtain, right? Mm-hmm. And one day, I'm a big New York Mets fan. My teacher was like, hey, watch this. And he called the publicist for the New York Mets. And he was like, hey, this is Adam Weiser from WPOB. I want to come down and interview a couple players. I was 14 years old. They approved the press request. And I went down and I was like, oh, wow, it's this easy to be behind the curtain. Like, and that was the, like, I can take a love of this. I got in a lot of trouble, too, because I was also walking up to the players. I'm like, can you sign this? Can you sign this? And the guy's like, that's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Like, but it was. And then I actually used that, and I started interviewing bands for my high school radio station. I'd go, at that time, it was like, you know, Third Eye Blind and Smash Mouth and Counting Crows, like that.
Yeah.
You know, like late 90s, early 2000s. And just to, like, see how it all worked and how it all kind of came together, like, was just, it was, I knew that that's what I wanted to be in. So there was no world I was going to do anything else but be in music.
I mean, that's how I was since high school, probably. I was like, I'm not very good at anything else, so I'll just do this. I love it. That's all I do anyway.
He's good at everything.
Did you always play? You always played?
Since I was 10. Yeah, I play guitar.
See, I can't play. Yeah. I can't play anything.
Yeah. Well, I can't promote tours, so.
And I think that was part of it of like, again, like I get to be part. My parents are accountants. And I always said I'm a glorified accountant, essentially. Mm-hmm. I get to be an accountant in the music industry where at the end of the day, an artist, big or small, says, hey, we want to go on tour. We want to charge $25 a ticket. We want to play to this many people. It's my job then to go figure out how that works. What does the venue cost? How much do you guys need for catering? How much do we need to market the show? And then kind of present the plan of like, well, hey, here's what it is. Here's what you're earning. Here's what I'm earning. Let's go, figure it out together.
And in the money of tours, it's always not built the same, right? There's like tour buyouts and different things like that.
It's a ton of different. You're talking about like catering or.
I just mean like aren't like as an artist, don't sometimes artists like just take a lump sum for the tour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we do that. I mean, and that's the difference, I think, of what I was doing before when I was at Starline Ballroom. I was just saying, hey, here's $10,000 to play a show today. You can go get different money every different day from a different promoter. I just care about New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Now in the position I'm in, it's working with artists on a larger plan, mostly globally, working on a plan that is, we're not looking at it so micro to show by show, but we're looking at it over the course of a year or a tour or 5 years or whatever it might be.
Are you or some of your counterparts like helping brand partnerships too, or is that?
Yeah, we do. I mean, there's a lot of people who have like if a brand wants to be part of an artist, they're going to find their way, whether it's through their management company, their agent, us. For us, we do the tailgates and before our Luke shows, and we have a bunch of brand partners on that kind of help support and fund that. And that's kind of a team effort of just, artists are brand magnets. So at the end of the day, like figuring out who works in the, kind of along with the artist, the brand that kind of associates best with, and then using them.
Yeah, it's like Miller Lite, Jack Daniels, Mapco.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
it's really wild though. Speaking of the Whiskey Jam outdoor shows, Tyler King, our guitar player at the band and band leader, was like, we were all just sitting around. Luke's like, what can we do to make this same tour different and cool? And Tyler's like, what if we just had a Whiskey Jam outside? And then.
Then kind of grew, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's what happened. And then next thing you know, Adam's over here doing logistics on.
I mean, to the point of like how tours come together, whether it's the tailgate or not, it's that, right? It's that you guys come to us with a vision, and it's our job to execute. And that idea came from Tyler, and then came to the team of like, how do we make a concert more than a concert, And how do we make this thing so fans are going to come? They're going to tailgate in the parking lot. Well, why don't we have them come tailgate and be part of our environment and create the environment they're going to be in? And it just kind of kept growing. I think the first year we had kind of a small little footprint. And I think in the last year we were doing 5,000 to 10,000 people that were out there before a show.
I remember watching Bailey Zimmerman out there. I think
that Megan Maroney and Bailey Zimmerman were the first two we had that. Nate Smith mm-hmm. was on, Dalton Dover was on yeah. one. Like we had, yeah.
Yeah. And then now it's like Colby was playing the Whiskey Jam outside. Then he was playing the stadium show inside.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I actually like it best when you guys play, but I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
To me, like, it's funny, like, to go back to the behind the curtain, like, I think that shows the fans a little bit of the behind. Like, that's that, like, the 15-year-old in me is like, man, that's the band. Like, that's so, they're, like, here, and I can reach them, mm-hmm. Like, there is something about that.
Well, and how many great singers in the band and songwriters. Yeah. It's kind of a cheat code, too.
Yeah,
I guess that is a pretty cool thing for the fans to kind of see, like you said, behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I remember when we were playing and we had a shit ton of people out there. I mean, for just the band.
Yeah.
And then the doors opened and everyone went, okay, we're going to talk. We're going to go buy beers.
You're like, we get it. Yeah.
But it is cool. I think that's the other part I'll talk about a lot with, like, especially artists who have like long time band members or whatever, is like them adopting their own personalities and fans kind of figuring out who's their band member that, you forget you're an extension of the artist, right? And you're an artist yourself. You have your own other stuff that you work on. Mm-hmm. But it's for a fan, like it's the coolest thing in the world,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in awe to be in presence right here. So
thanks, man. What is like the weirdest sort of tour request that you've had?
There's always the dogs and monkeys and riders and things like that, which never actually happen.
Oh, really?
I'm trying to think of the weirdest request.
I mean, like, for a tour, it's like we, you know, have the whiskey jam thing, and maybe Casey wants to come down from a ceiling, and so you have to build in extra rigging and safety, and I'm sure there's got to be, because you don't promote just country acts too, right?
Yeah, we do. We do everything across the board.
So,
man, the weirdest one, I'm trying to think. I was really going the opposite way of the weirdest rider thing, which is where I went to the monkeys. every club rider has, you know, we want 5 monkeys backstage. We want fresh underwear, cigarettes, you know.
Yeah.
The craziest, man, I don't know that I have an answer to that. I'm like looking around at the posters here to see if I can pinpoint someone.
Yeah.
But
have you worked on some of these? Of course. Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah,
they're all great.
All right. Well, you have to get back to us on that.
I'll get back to you on that. I got to think about that.
Weirdest riders is pretty interesting. I mean, the famous one is the Van Halen one, right? Is that an urban legend or is that real?
No, I believe it's real. It is an urban legend. But I think that the context of it was about paying attention. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're all taught when we're younger. It's like, it wasn't about like these guys just wanted green M&Ms.
Of course.
It was, they wanted to make sure that people are actually reading this and paying attention. And that's where also the, like, again, we always get the, like, we want dogs, we want monkeys, we want, you know, and then just some silly stuff that you would never buy. But on the other side, as the promoter, it's a challenge of like, I'm going to get this. Like, I'm going to be the guy that shows up with 4 monkeys to, you know, but I think, but that's, it might've been, whether urban legend or not, it was about paying attention is what we're kind of taught.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that goes a long way, especially when safety is involved, you know, and I think that was part of it also.
Yeah.
It was like, let's make sure if they're not paying attention to the rider, then they're not paying attention to the pyro or whatever, kind of stuff like that.
Yep.
So who else besides Luke and Zach? I know you've worked with and are working with some pretty cool artists.
Yeah, I mean, right now on the road, Kelsey Ballerini, we kick off tonight on the second half of the arena tour. That's been amazing.
Is that in town?
No, it's in Seattle.
Okay.
So that kicks off tonight. Megan Maroney starts next week. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about that.
I just played with Christian last night.
Oh, really?
Which was cool, yeah.
Co Wetzel, we've got, he's opening most of the year, but we've got Co Wetzel playing a show this weekend in Corpus Christi. I'm trying to think what else is going on. Warren Ziders kicks off in a couple of weeks.
Have you got to work with like any of your musical heroes from when you were a kid? Like Billy Joel or anything?
I wish Billy Joel. Yeah. I actually, to the point, it's funny, our company did Billy Joel and Lionel Richie in Atlanta at the stadium a couple years ago. And I was such a nerd. Like, I was backstage.
Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah. I was such a nerd. Like, I was backstage and I saw Billy Joel come up in a golf cart and, like, literally shied away and, like, hid. Like, I was like, there's not many people that, and I'm like, oh my God, celebrity status. I was a New Yorker.
I totally get it. Yeah.
It is.
If I got to meet James Hetfield, I would be the same way.
Yeah.
Like, I've met a lot of famous people, but, like, that's the one dude I would just be like,
yeah, I'd be on that one as well, you know.
Yeah,
it's funny. Now, are you a sports guy or no?
Yeah.
I get more. See, it's funny being in like the Luke world and the amount of play like baseball, football players that come out to shows. That's where I nerd out hard. Of like,
we had John Lester at one of our Georgia theater show, or maybe it was like the Tabernacle or something. One of the Atlanta, Georgia. He came out and I was hanging out with him, and Luke's like, John, like, my guitar player is too scared to ask you for a pick. Would you take a pick for him? And he's like, yeah, sure. And I was like, World Series champion, John Lester. I'm a Red Sox fan. So it was cool to get to meet him. I got to meet Dan Marino, which was I'm a Dolphins fan. So that was like, I was like, you're professional. Don't bother people. Don't go up and ask sports players to sign your water bottle like you do when you're 14. Like, I just don't do that. And then this is when I was playing with Michael Ray. He's like, just fucking go talk to him. I'm like, all right, fine. I walked over and Dan was hanging out, just drinking, tailgating with Darius and the folks. I'm like, hey, Dan, I'm a huge fan or whatever. And he was like, I'm a huge fan of that beard. Good to meet you. And he was like, super cool. I was like, all right, cool.
And they mostly are.
Yeah.
But I still nerd out about that stuff.
Yeah.
Sports. Memorabilia.
I was crazy, crazy into sports when I was younger.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh specifically, like, that's where I grew up. If you're not into sports, you can't have conversations with your friends. Yeah. You know? Like, really, you know? Yeah. Like, you have no idea what everyone else is talking about. But the one thing, and I think I've kind of gotten into this older in life, I'm like, okay, I go spend $150 going to a Steelers game. And half the time, well, maybe not half the time with the Steelers.
Yeah.
A third of the time, I leave unhappy. Right?
Okay, you're the second person in a week to mention, and I've never really thought about it that way. Like, it's actually crazy. you know, it's funny in our industry. There's, think about what people pay for sports prices, right? They pay. I mean, I went to a game earlier this week. The prices are astronomical. Like,
okay, you're not calling out the game or what?
I'm not gonna. I mean, I went to Rockets and Magic. I was in Houston.
Okay.
But the prices are astronomical to go. And then you put concert tickets on sale, and people are like, "Wow, those tickets are really high." Like, but to your point, you leave a concert happy pretty much all the time.
99% of the time. Yeah.
And but a sports game, you don't. And 50? But yet we're pretty happy paying what we pay for sports games.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
I mean, is an NBA ticket similar price to like a Luke Combs Arena ticket back then?
No. Exceptionally higher.
Really?
Yeah. NBA sports. Going to a sports game is so, I mean, but if you think about, people will go, how many sports, I mean, I guess you're on the road, maybe you go to more, but like when you're a fan, how many games, you go to a handful of games a year.
Yeah.
So you're going to drop real money to go to a game. Mm-hmm. But people go to concerts every night of the week.
You know, yeah.
Or every weekend, you know?
Well, and that's like me and Matt were talking about this. I'm like, what shows fill your heart the most? Is it festivals? Is it stadium shows? For me, it's like a club show. Like a good club show of an artist that's popping off and the crowd's into it.
Yep.
And I'm seven rows deep, so I get to see all those people in front of me and I get to hear everybody behind me. Like, that's my favorite place to be. Now, a pit ticket at a stadium, it's like recreating the club, you know, for me. That's so like, I love a pit ticket.
This is like a little club show right here, and there's another little club show on the other side.
Yeah. But it's like, that's why I love pit tickets. Because pit tickets takes the window in which I can see a club show and extends it.
Having turned 43, you're going to want to sit down soon.
Yeah, I know. I already do. Yeah. No, but like we were
on the show.
Yes. We went, Kurt took me as his plus one to Dan and Shay in town.
Yeah. Well, 2024 was that? Last year?
Probably last year. Yeah. And he was like, do you want to be back here by the soundboard or do you want to go up to the pit? I'm like, I always want to go.
I always want to be in it. I want to be around fans. I want to be the energy. And like I said, everything that we're fortunate to work on, like I'm genuinely a fan of. So it's like to the point of going to shows, like I want to see it. I want to be a part of it. I don't want to be the guy that's just in the suite or backstage or at the front of house board or whatever it is. Like it's the coolest thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that energy.
Amen. I miss playing shows. I played a show last night, but it doesn't count.
When's your next show?
Tortuga.
Okay.
Yeah, with Luke. Yeah.
They offered us to come down, but I don't think I can swing it.
Yeah. Travel.
Yeah. Lots of money. We're just poor, you know.
Yeah.
Next year, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us and answering some of our questions.
You said education. I don't know that I educated much, but I think so. I appreciate the conversation.
You're incorrect. Hearing how people got there and what it looks like when you're there is really the thing.
I appreciate that.
And we've had people, of course, like on our regular podcast as guests. But this one is like, if someone's not in this and they want to be, they can hear the stories of how it works and how you get there.
I appreciate that. And I would say my biggest thing is like, again, going back to the babysitting thing, it's like, it's just hustle. And it's just, you know, it's like, it's funny. We talk about it all the time in our walls of like, you find a few kids who want to do this, and like when they want to do it, like they're in, you know.
Yeah.
And I have people who are like, "Hey, can you introduce me to the tour manager? Like, I want their job." And I'm like, all day long, you know.
Yeah.
There's no special thing that it takes. Just passion.
Yeah. Passion, being willing to learn and adapt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of people messaging me like, "How do you get a cool gig like that?" You know, just like on the weird part of Instagram, and like I'm like, I love talking to these people for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's just like when I first moved to town, I hit up like Jeff King, who plays guitar for Reba and Brooks and Dunn. And I'm like, I have an audition coming up. What do I do? And he was like, come over. So I brought a bottle of whiskey over and we play guitar. And he explained to me just guitar shit, you know? So I love doing that for people too.
Same. Yeah. I'll do a coffee and meal anytime with people. And because I'm like, someone did it for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know,
yeah, well, we appreciate it, man. Thank you. I know it's not really, you're not here to promote anything. Usually an artist like, my new single's coming out, but this is just kind of like, I want to know more stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's always that AEG office that I walk by, and they have like games and stuff to lure people in to come hang, you know, because it gets lonely in there.
It is lonely. We're kind of, I don't want to say we're the far forgotten ones, but like we're there to do a job, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, the funny part, which not to go back, like they're in there full weeks. Like you come home, right? Oh, you get to come home. They're there full week. So for them, it gets a little delirious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they get there well before I do and are there well afterwards.
Yeah. So it's a...
But it's also, as just a band guy, and maybe I've just been a little, I haven't been paying attention enough, but it's like, I just didn't really kind of understand like the full scope of everything. So for this, I was like, let's get Adam in here. I'm just want to pick his brain, you know? And the Nick's like, let's get some more industry people. And then, you know, you won the CMA award. Sorry to bring that up again, but I was like, okay, this makes sense. Let's do this. And so it was cool.
Well, I appreciate
it. So now I have a new appreciation for y'all.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And we think other people are too. Honestly, like we get hit up for things about the music biz almost more than we get hit up for regular podcasts. So we're super thankful to have you be a part of it, man.
Happy to be part of it.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.